Welcome to Books and Beyond with your host, Alison. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library.
Nau mai, haere mai, kia ora. Welcome to our Books and Beyond Literary Lounge session with Alison and Inika. Kia ora, Inika.
Kia ora, Alison.
Well, look, on today's show, we're going to be talking about what we've been reading and then what's on our massive to-be-read list, because we're going to continue with our Booker's Dozen series, where we break down the 2021 Booker Prize long list and offer some suggestions on one what else you might want to read while you wait to get your hands on the long listed titles.
Awesome.
So, but before we get to that, what have you been reading this week, Inika?
I have been reading a couple of coming of age novels, and I think you might have as well.
Yeah.
From what I've been gathering over the coffees. Yeah, so we're going to have a bunch of young people. Let's talk about the youngs. Yeah. The book I've been reading most recently is Edie Richter Is Not Alone by Rebecca Handler. This is a 2021 novel, a debut by San Francisco-based writer Rebecca Handler. Our main character Edie is in her 30s and she's recently been married to a nice guy called Oren. She has just moved from the US to Perth in Australia. Oren's been transferred for work. But this has happened at a really significant time for her. It's happened straight after she's witnessed firsthand the rapid decline and then death of her beloved father due to Alzheimer's. Now, she was one of her primary caregivers in his last year of life, and so she's in a sort of state of severe grief and limbo, and she's actually also carrying a secret that only she knows about the circumstances around his death. Now, I'm not going to let you know what those circumstances are, because I think you should read it. Now, the title says Edie Richter is not alone, but actually she isn't. Her mum and sister are in contact with her. Oren's quite supportive, although he is busy with his new job. And she gets a pretty warm welcome from the Australians that she meets when she first gets there, at least until it starts turning to custard, really. She's got this burden of secrecy and guilt and fear around what happened with her father's death, and she's carrying that all on her own. She hasn't told anyone what's happened there. And this tension in this grows throughout the book. She is going to explode if she doesn't tell someone soon. And whether she tells someone or doesn't, it will put her Aussie neighbours' noses out of joint. It's just a heads up there. Now, it sounds funny. It is funny at times, but mostly it's quite a sort of serious book, really, with a touch of sort of auto-fiction, because Rebecca Handler herself watched her own father die from complications relating to Alzheimer's, and she also moved to Perth for a time afterwards. So it's got that thing that we see quite a lot in books, quite, you know, heavily influenced by her own experience. And the writing's quite plain. It reminded me a little bit of Otis and Moshvik.
Oh, right.
It's got some humour, but it is, and it's quite unflinching in these sort of hard truths that come up in the book about, you know, when is the right time to be cruel, to be kind? Does the distance, you know, whether you're physically on the other side of the world or you've got emotional distance from the people around you, make the heart grow fonder, or does it really make a difficult situation worse? And also, how much is one life worth? Yeah. It's an interesting one. She's a really smart writer, a very acute observer of human behaviour and relationships. She had a cool outsider eye on Aussie characters. I really like those bits. There's a lot about sort of how we can convince ourselves into a decision or an action when we're under pressure and what the consequences of that can be. Sort of reminded me a bit of Sorrow and Bliss.
Oh, yes, the Meg Mason.
Yeah, a little bit. Sort of woman in crisis, low self-esteem, feeling quite unlovable and a little bit detached from those who are caring for her while she's kind of, going through this crisis. Yeah, so less than 200 pages. I think it's a good one to read in one sitting. That's what I did.
Oh, that does sound really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, look, I read something that I really enjoyed this week, and it's also perhaps we could take that theme of the fabric unravelling, a life perhaps unravelling, depending on how you read it. So this one's called Careless, and it's by Kirsty Capes, just published in 2021 as well. It's Kirsty Capes' debut novel, and it looks as though it's destined to be quite a hit, actually. It's a powerful coming-of-age novel set in 1990s Britain. So there's lots of pop culture references there for those of us old enough to remember, or young enough to remember that time as well. So it's a story about a young woman called Bess who's in the foster care system in the UK. And she's when the story begins, she's 15 and she's been in the care of the same family since she was about 4 years old. And so to the authorities, this placement is actually a success because she's got a roof over her head, food on the table and foster parents who appear to love her. It's conditional love, but hey, you know, that's good enough and stable. And so, yeah, she's a success, in inverted commas. So when we meet Bess, as I said, she's 15 and she's just discovered that she's pregnant to a 19-year-old chap called Boy. She doesn't even know his real name, but everyone calls him Boy. Now, Boy's a really rebellious kind of guy. He's actually a petty thief because he meets Bess when he steals her bike. So, and then it's...
Meet cute.
Yes. So it's kind of like that enemies to lovers trope, actually. Love you, you know, hate you. You stole my bike, I love you. But so he's a thief and everything, but he's essentially got a good heart, but he's kind of not the kind of boy that your mum would want you to be involved with, let alone to be the father of your child,
right,
put it that way. Now, Bess's relationship with her foster mum, Lisa, is pretty fraught. So the dilemma she faces, she must decide, should she keep the baby or have a termination and pursue her dreams of becoming a filmmaker? And all of this while trying to be a normal teenager. Because it's in the 90s too, they're always lighting up fags out the back of the shops and drinking lukewarm lagers.
Don't know anything about that, Alison.
No, I don't know
you're talking about.
Yeah. So fortunately for Bess, she's got a best friend from school called Ishal. And Ishal's parents, who are Mr. and Mrs. Bhandari, have immigrated from Bangladesh. And they've got their own huge problems navigating a really racist society. But Mrs. Bhandari wraps Bess in love. And there's a real lesson here about families of choice, you know, those people we choose to have in our lives. Now, what's so interesting about this, Bess's voice really clearly tells the story of the experience of being in care. And apparently there's very little around that gives voice to the foster care experience. And she says things like, my two life choices are either to do really, really well at school so I can get out of town as quickly as possible, or become one of the locals in the crossroads who drink so much that all their teeth have fallen out. I could go either way right now. And then she talks about the limits that are placed on foster families from the system or the authorities.
Right.
And she says, in this family, we don't talk about love. We just don't. It's a care thing. It's against the rules, for starters. The rules that say foster carers can't hug you or even take you for a haircut without permission.
Gosh.
So it's, and so talk about struggles for bodily autonomy. You know, you can't even get a haircut without getting permission.
Yeah.
Let alone have the usual issues of that teenage girls and women face about control of their bodies,
sure,
etc. Yeah, so profound insight really into the impact of the conditional love that's placed on a looked-after child.
Mm.
And the transactional nature of being in care, when she finds all the receipts that her foster mum's kept about the, you know, things that, where they might have gone to the park or, you know, on a holiday or something like that, or bought some clothes, and then she realises that her foster parents are claiming everything back.
Oh,
and
gosh, yeah. So, yeah.
Does feel, it becomes like a transaction, doesn't it?
Mm.
Gee, it's a good book. It absolutely stole my heart. I just loved the relationship between Bess and Ishal.
Mm.
And I found the book had a bit of a Dairy Girls vibe going on, actually. Sort of kind of like Dairy Girls without the nuns.
Not a bad thing. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. So, interestingly, the author, Kirsty Capes, grew up in the care system in the UK, and she now advocates for better representation for care experienced people,
right,
in the media. And she's been mentored and academically supervised by Professor Bernardine Evaristo.
Oh, wonderful.
Who won the book up for Girl, Woman, Other.
Yes.
And she's recently completed a PhD in literature that's looking at female-centric care narratives in contemporary fiction.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah. So it's good that that work's being done.
Absolutely. I can only think of one other book that's sort of on that vein, and it's by Kit DeWell.
Oh.
Is it My Name is Leon, maybe, or one of her other ones? I'm trying to think.
Yes, that rings a bell.
Yeah. Which I highly recommend too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this sounds great. I'm definitely going to get on the list for that.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. And it's funny too. Funny and sad. And yeah, it's a really good read.
Yeah. Sounds awesome. Well, on to our third coming of age novel. This is also 2021. Gee, we've got a lot of those today.
Yeah.
And it's called Snowflake by Louise Nelon, who is an Irish writer, a young Irish writer. Now, I think that probably fans and maybe even haters of Sally Rooney will really enjoy this coming-of-age story set in just outside of Dublin. Now, our main character is Debbie White. She's 18. She's smart as a tack, and she's very bored of her life on a small, rundown dairy farm about an hour out of Dublin. She really loves her Uncle Billy, who's helped to bring her up. But he's got his own struggles with getting the farm work done because he's got a drinking problem. So he's got a lot on his plate, Uncle Billy. He lives in the caravan next door. She does try and avoid having too much interaction with her mum. Her mum is called Maeve, and Maeve had Debbie when she was only 18. So, you know, young mum. Maeve has got a bit of a touch of that, you know, Irish magic about her, but also tipping over into some mental health issues. She scrapbooks her entire room with her dream diaries, and she insists that both she and Debbie have got the skill of predicting the future. She believes that they both, when they dream, they're actually observing other people's lives in their dreams. So it's a bit hard to describe, but yeah, she's quite an eccentric character, and her eccentricities quite easily tip over into uncaring, sometimes violent, sometimes damaging experiences for herself and her family. Now, Debbie has just finished school, and she's managed to get into Trinity College, but she's actually, she's got quite a low confidence level, and she's trying to kind of slip through college and kind of get what she needs out of it without having to interact too much with teachers, other students. Mm-hmm. She's quite insecure about fitting in, and she's got a sort of strong wish that she wishes she was as confident and kind of cashed up as some of the people that are there, but she's also got this strong kind of resentment for that as well. She'd really like to have a boyfriend. Actually, she'd quite like her best friend's boyfriend, who she had the crush on first, but she's not really sure if she wants to take it further than a good snog. She's a bit sarky. She's a bit insecure, like I said. She's very worried about her mum and her increasingly unpredictable behaviours. And she's not really sure what to do about it and what she can do about it, because she's kind of got used to keeping that under wraps from other people in the outside of the home, the way her mum's behaviours kind of can tip over. The book kind of builds up into a a kind of series of crises that sort of follow one after the another, which brings them to sort of a tipping point where things really can't go on as they have been without getting some outside help. So, yeah, this is a really quick, satisfying read. It's got heaps going for it. Now, some people found, you know, that they didn't really enjoy, you know, Marianne and Connor and Connell and normal people. Thank you for that. Yeah. I was like, conversation with friends. But Debbie is a very, very likable and sympathetic character. She's got a real dry humour and she's got quite a soft centre. She really wants to get further towards what she thinks is a successful adulthood. She doesn't have like great examples of that going on in her life, but she does have lots of love coming in different ways. She has to swap between being the child and the carer when she's at home, and then she has to kind of try and take on another role with her university friends as she's never really sure if she's hitting the mark. So it's very relatable coming of age story. Yeah.
Sounds really good.
Yeah. And it's a rural experience rather than, yeah, it's got this sort of, yeah, big fish, well, no, small fish in a big pond kind of feel as well.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds really good. I'm going to put my name down for that one.
Nice.
Well, now, as you may have heard from us when we were talking last week, the highly anticipated Booker long list of 13 novels is out and about in the world now. And we've been taking the opportunity to take a look at all the titles, and we're also providing some additional tasty titles to whet your appetite if you're waiting for the main course. So now we present to you part two of the Auckland Library's mini-series on the Booker's Dozen. So, as we say, last week we did episode one. So today we're going to talk about three more titles that are on the Booker Dozen. So last week we looked at Maggie Shipstead's Great Circle and Damon Gulgut's The Promise. And so this week we're going to talk about The China Room by Sanjeev Sahota and An Island by Karen Jennings. And I think we'll have time for The Sweetness of Water.
We'll try and squeeze it in. We'll see how we go.
Yeah. By Nathan Harris. So,
that's right.
Yeah,
well, first one up is China Room by Sanjeev Sahota. So this book, the synopsis here, we haven't got our hands on it yet, so just reading off the screen. Meha is a young bride in rural 1929 Punjab, and she is trying to discover the identity of her new husband. She's been married to three brothers in a single ceremony, but she hasn't met them yet. Now, spiralling around Meha's story, we have a story at the other end of the century. A young man who arrives in Punjab, he's trying to shake off an addiction. So he's been dealing with racism in England and addiction issues and kind of struggling with his identity there. And he has come back to India to try and reconnect with his homeland and his family. Now, we would suggest that you take a look at one of Sanjeev Sahota's earlier books, The Year of the Runaways. Now, this one tells, there's plenty of copies at the moment, so you can get this at the library while you wait for China Room. This is about a sort of a family of choice thrown together by circumstance, a bit like what we were talking before. 13 young men live in a house in Sheffield. They're each in flight from India for different reasons, and they're all looking for new lives. It moves between India and England and between childhood experiences and the present day. We'd also suggest that, this one is not set in India. This is Home Fire by Camilla Shamsi from 2017. And you may be familiar with this book. It was a very big book in its year. This is a story of a family of siblings. Isma is the eldest in the family, and she has had the charge of her younger siblings for many years. Now, it's a big responsibility for a young person in her early 20s. She gets an invitation to go to America to pursue her studies, and she would really like to be able to take the opportunity up. But she's still worried about how her sister back in London is going to fare without her. And she's particularly worried about their brother, Parvez, who's disappeared. And now, the secret behind this family is that they have a jihadi father who, you know, they haven't really had a good connection with. They have never, Parvez in particular, has never met met his father. He resurfaces after disappearing half a world away, and this is when Ismar realizes that he has been kind of captured up in the jihadi mindset and has gone to kind of prove himself in the homeland. Yeah, very fascinating novel. Again, a really short read, really powerful and hard-hitting. It's a British Muslim second generation experience rather than British Hindi in this case, but it's got that same return to the family's homeland for, you know, difficult reasons, yeah, that have to be explored in the book. Now, it's loosely based on the Greek tragedy of Antigone, which I cannot remember the details of right now.
No, I realise.
Despite having studied it at school. Oh, my goodness.
I had to confess that earlier, didn't I?
But I can promise you from my own heart that you won't be missing very much if you're not familiar with that story, so don't worry about that. I also recommend, this is an older book, but quite a famous one, a 1993 book, A Suitable Boy by Vikram Seth. Now, we talk about chonkers. This book is 1,300 or more pages long.
It's huge, isn't it?
It's absolutely huge. It tells the story of Lata, who's 16 at the start of the novel, and her mother's attempts to find a suitable boy for her through love or through maternal appraisal. It's set in post-independence India, and it follows the lives of four very large families, and it also explores the cultural context and the historical context of the Indian continent. So this is a really broad-ranging book. It's a real experience. You will never forget reading it. It is a long time since I've read it, but you've read other books by Vikram Seth and been equally impressed, hey, Alison?
Yes, I just adore him. I think he's the most exquisite writer. Mm. And I've loved everything he's written. So he's divine. He's really, I can't say enough about him. So.
Ringing endorsement.
Yes, and his writing is beautiful.
It's really lush, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. Now, this one was controversially not chosen for the book along list in its year of publication, but ended up winning first place in an alternative kind of not the Booker prize, which was judged by other writers. Really worth your time. Apparently, it's been recently adapted into a miniseries, which you can find on Netflix, which I haven't checked out yet, but one to look out for too.
And I didn't realise that, so I'm going to check that out as well.
I think it's on Netflix, Lee.
Fab. Oh, that's good. Well, look, the next one we're going to do from the booklet, the long list, the booker.
The booker.
Booker. Have a looker at the booker.
Let's do that.
I've been wanting to say that all morning. This book called An Island by Karen Jennings. Mm. Now, Karen Jennings is a South African writer. She lives in Brazil now. I think her husband works there or is studying or something. But anyway, this one is her third novel. And her interests lie in colonialism historically, and also on the lasting impact that colonialism has had on the continent of Africa and beyond. Mm. So she's got pretty broad interests. So the story of an island, the main character, Samuel, is an elderly lighthouse keeper who's lived alone on an unnamed small island for many, many years. And one morning he finds that the sea has brought someone to offer companionship and also to threaten his solitude. Mm. So basically a young refugee has washed up unconscious on the beach. So Samuel's really unsettled by this, and he's soon swept up in memories of his former life on the mainland, a life that saw his country suffer under colonisers, then fight for independence, only to fall under the rule of a cruel dictator.
Mm.
And Samuel also recalls his own part in this continent's history. So then with the presence of the new young man, he starts to consider, as he did in his youth, what do we mean by land and who does it belong to?
Mm.
And what lengths will a person go to ensure that what is theirs, what they think is theirs, will not be taken from them. So apparently it's a novel about guilt and fear, friendship and rejection, and about the meaning of home.
Wow. We call home. Sounds like a little microcosm.
Yeah.
You know, look at that experience of having someone come onto your turf.
Yes, that's right. Oh. I can't wait to read it. It sounds really, really good. Now, what we were thinking, some books to read while you wait to get hold of this one, I would choose The Sympathiser by Viet Thanh Nguyen, 2015, that came out. Now, this one was a novel about the Vietnam War and then the experience of being a Vietnamese refugee in America in the 70s and 1980s. It also has a lot about the horrors of war and the experience of displaced people who are setting out in boats to try and get to a new life.
Mm, still happening, of course.
Yes, yeah. Of course. Still as relevant as ever.
Ever it was.
And when you're in the promised land, the power of that land, but also the paranoia that is often experienced. And in this one, The Sympathiser, there's spies, double agents and the Catholic Church. So
what some hefty...
Yes, yes.
Hefty
what a,
eyes.
What a good trinity that, yes. That would be. Yeah. So, yeah, and so the other one I would be inclined to recommend on that one is the one by Dave Eggers, 2006, so it's going back a wee while, and it's called What is the What?
Mm.
Now, this is was a biographical novel based on the life of a Sudanese child refugee called Valentino Archik Dang, and he immigrated to the United States under a program called the Lost Boys of Sudan.
Mm.
And this was after the second Sudanese Civil War, which started in the late 80s and went through to 2005.
Oh gosh, that's long.
Yeah, oh, I know. Huge chunk of history. And during this time, and I must admit to my shame, I don't know a great deal about this, but no. I think I learned really from reading this book, that tens of thousands of children were displaced or orphaned during this terrible time, and they embarked on really treacherous journeys to refugee camps in Ethiopia and Kenya, where they waited to be resettled in promised lands, countries like America and
Europe, etc. Dangers of children alone in that situation.
Yes, that's right. But as you say, it's still happening now, isn't it? Nothing ever changes. And then the other one I'd be inclined to recommend would be Exit West by Mohsen Hamid.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah, you've talked about that quite a bit, haven't you? 2017. And that's a novel about the refugee experience of a young couple. Now, they're living in it's an unnamed city, isn't it? That's undergoing civil war. And there's this sort of magical realism.
There is.
Yeah, and they managed to escape the city using its sort of a system of magical doors.
Yeah, with sort of gatekeepers.
Yes.
Yeah, people in the know.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's a bit of a metaphor, because you really do need, there's so many gatekeepers, I imagine, on the way.
That's right. In order to actually make it happen. And then you have to just make the most of what you find when you get there.
Yeah. That's right. It's an amazing book, isn't it?
It is.
Beautiful.
It is.
Yeah. And, you know, I was saying to you earlier too, and perhaps we could put it on our longer book list, but what I'd also be inclined to, you know, while you're waiting for An Island by Karen Jennings, I'd even look at some of the earlier Margaret Atwoods too.
Yeah.
And then there's an Ann Patchett, some of Ann Patchett's stuff. I think you could quite easily read and enjoy and get the feel for.
Yeah, I think we should add a few extra titles onto the blog post that goes with this so we can explore it a bit more. Yeah.
Yes, but particularly because then you do get a more of a female perspective of looking for refuge, safety.
Yes, yes, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds good. I think we won't have time for The Sweetness of Water by Nathan Harris. We'll have to leave that till next time.
Yeah, sadly, we will have to. So, look, thank you, everyone. We will talk to you next week and or in the week after, whenever. And thank you so much. Happy reading. Haere nā, ka kite anō.